Take Command is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
Guys, by now you've heard me talk about Collars & Co., makers of the dress collar polo. They've already sold over a million of these amazing shirts. Well, Collars & Co. just came out with the new Maverick Performance Blazer. This blazer is sharp and wrinkle-resistant, so you can travel anywhere with it. Just throw it in your bag and it will remain wrinkle-free. It even comes with security zip pockets, a sunglasses loop, and an optional pocket square. So visit collarsandco.com and use code TIKI for 20% off at Collars & Co.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Take Command. He's Logan. I'm Grant. Thank you for making this program part of your regular viewing and listening. We give you three episodes a week. We do a breakdown after every game live on Sundays. We also give you a recap with Logan's film review, generally Monday, Tuesday. And then we give you a film preview based on what he sees on the tape from the upcoming opponent. So three times a week, we are going to be a mainstay for you in your feeds. Make sure you track us throughout the season. Logan, we'd be remiss if we didn't get into the Jaden Daniels injury. I didn't want to make this whole pod about that. And also, with good reason, we don't have a lot of information yet. What I do know is that he took an MRI. He was one of a half dozen players, I think, that was sent off for imaging after this game. And that there's some fear that he's not going to be able to practice throughout much of this week. There is a possibility he does not play this weekend. I mean, when you hear he comes out with a knee, he's got some bad swelling, he's getting imaging. Just as a player, does any part of you say, let's be extra careful here in week three? Or is that too overstated? Is that I was here for 2012 and Robert Griffin in me that comes out and says, let's make sure this guy is 100% before he plays football again? Or are you okay with he's going to play at 85%? I ask this because he had a broken rib last year and he played through it. And looking back, I don't think he should have, for the record. I know he had the Hail Mary pass in that first game, but he was compromised. It was the four games all season where he wasn't really himself, but nobody said, no, you're not playing. And maybe it's a different thing than a knee. I get that. But I'm just wondering, there's still a lot of information we need. But in a world where he's not completely healthy, could you be okay with him kind of gutting through a minor knee injury?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what the injury is. I think that's the thing, and we don't know, obviously. I've seen some crazy stuff in the NFL, and I've seen quarterbacks play through crazy stuff, and they've been fine, and you would never know. I've played through crazy stuff. I've torn my MCL twice.
What was the craziest thing you played through?
I've torn my MCL twice. I did it once in 2013 and once in 2017, so grade 2 tear, and then they just tape it up, and you take some pain medication and it heals up enough and you play, and it sucked and it hurts super bad. But every week you do it and you get through it and they give you some anti-inflammatories and you're like, here we go. So
now, what's your logic on that? Is it just this is my job? Or in your case, is it I can't afford to not be out there because someone else takes my role? What are you thinking when you do that?
So I think this gets into more what athlete psychology is, right? It's the competitor in you. And I'm not trying to hype myself up, but it's you want to do it for the guys. You know what I mean? It's this weird psychology experiment when you're I don't want to let anybody down. That's the funny psychology of being on a team is I'm going to do everything I can to support the team, to help the team. And obviously, for me, there was also a little bit of I don't want to give anybody else this opportunity because, if I do, maybe I don't get my job back. So there, all that kind of pours into the decision to kind of play and be really uncomfortable for, a big chunk of the year. And that sucks, but that's life. That's life.
The good thing is Jaden doesn't have to worry about the second part, right? You can take a breather and you're not going to get Wally pipped by Marcus Mariota. Interestingly, by the way, his former team, the Raiders, where he played his best football post Tennessee, is next up on the schedule. And then after that, Atlanta, where he had the weird falling out and left the building. So those are the two teams looming here. Again, we don't have a whole lot of information, but I guess going back into Jaden, it sounds like for you, it's not a binary of like, okay, if you're not able to fully practice and you're not completely healthy, then we're going to wait. Because I agree. Like, I remember Drew Brees and different guys taping stuff up. What I've said in the past about Daniels, and I'm open to you blowing me out of the water and telling me I'm crazy, is when you're one of the leading rushing quarterbacks in the league, when you haven't, you know, he's pretty good at avoiding big hits, but he also takes some huge shots. We saw him land on his head at one point in this Packers game. Like, I do have to protect those guys differently. And maybe I'm flawed because of my lived experiences, right? I covered the Shanahan Redskins. But when you run around as much as he does, when your secret sauce is being able to get out of the pocket, I just, that's going to be baked into my thinking. You tell me what you think about that.
Yeah. So what I would say is that's totally reasonable. That's totally reasonable to let that past experience inform this current situation. But also, like, what is the injury? How's the athlete handling the pain or the discomfort of the injury? Like, does it hamper him? Does it hinder him? Maybe, like, I've played with dudes who've had like crazy bone bruises and it showed up on the MRI and they're like, you're going to miss 3 weeks. And they'll practice in 2 days and it doesn't really bother them as much as the doctor thinks it should. And they're ready to go and they look great. And it's, and again, it's different for different positions. Like, offensive linemen will play with pretty much anything, you know, but receivers, because they're kind of these fine tuned machines, it becomes a little bit more impactful. So again, I think as we get more information about the injury, like, we can kind of assess like what's going on here. But really, like, some of the best trainers I ever had were like, how do you feel? How do you feel about what's going on? You know, like, what's going on with the knee or the ankle or whatever? Then you can run. We'll go watch you run. We'll go watch you do your drops. Does it bother you? The answer is no. Okay, we'll do a little bit more tomorrow and see how it goes. So I think that's it's a fluid situation. We'll see what happens. And again, like, it's with him, because of how much efficiency he gets out of like walkthroughs and the VR stuff, I'd probably be okay if he didn't practice a ton and you still played in the game. But we'll see. We'll assess the injury. We'll see where he's at. And the guys in the building will make a great decision about his, you know, not only about this week, but about the future of his career as well. So to me, this is like, until we get more information about the injury, let's figure it out and go from there.
The Bears game last year after the broken rib was the first game after, and he played in that game despite almost no practice time, if you remember, to your point. So that informs somewhat on what they think he might be capable of in the way of getting enough of those mental reps to play in a game, even if you're not able to get on the grass, which I find interesting. But yeah, I know we don't have enough information. That's why I wanted to more philosophically like tap into your expertise on every case is different.
Yeah,
that goes without saying. But my point is, it's week three. It's a team flying cross country who played on Monday Night Football, and you're coming off not having played on Thursday. There's never been a bigger rest advantage in the history of football than this game. And I think that's a really big deal. If there's ever a time for me to go, let's just be sure here in the third week of a marathon, this would be it. But your point is,
Maybe he's fine. Maybe, like you said, he gets an extra couple of days. Maybe he feels good. Maybe, like, that's the other thing is, got some guys, like, you know, they used to give us like indomethacin, right? And I remember with the MCL.
That was just a bunch of syllables. Was that a word you just said? What was it?
Indomethacin. Yeah, it's like an anti-inflammatory. Okay. And so you'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to take my indomethacin. And like, one of my craziest stories, this is one of my craziest injury stories. So I sprained my AC joint in my right shoulder, my left shoulder. And so like, that's when the AC joint is just off. Boom. And you get all this inflammation. It hurts like hell. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't even pick my arm up. Like, this is like, it would just hang dead at my side. I couldn't lift it up. So I go in, I'm doing all this treatment, and like, they had this, I had to like, someone had to like help me lift my arm up. And I'm like, man, there's no way, absolutely no way I can play in this game. And that was on Monday. And then I'm in the building all day. Eventually I got it so I could kind of lift it off my hip. I could put my hand in my pocket kind of deal, but it hurt like hell. So like, all right, well, let's get you a Toradol shot real quick. So I went in there, got a Toradol shot. And I'll be damned if the next day I couldn't put my hand above my head and do the whole thing. You know what I mean? So, like, there's some pretty sick medications and anti-inflammatories they can give you. And, like, these training staffs are smart, man. They're really good. They're really locked in. They know athletes. And so that's where it's like, until we know the actual injury, like, because I've seen dudes play with the craziest stuff. Like the guy I played with had a broken leg, for crying out loud. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, London Fletcher, his ankle didn't work for, like, a full season and he didn't miss a game. Like, right. You know what I mean? It's like you can do stuff. It just depends on the athlete, the pain tolerance, and what the training thinks they can tolerate. So as we get reports in the week, and maybe in the show we do later in the week, we'll have more information, give you a better idea of like what we actually think is going to happen. But as of right now, like because they're keeping it so vague, and because, again, like I've seen the craziest stuff. I've seen dudes come off the field with a back injury, not be able to like literally walk, and then they play the next Sunday. Like it's just there.
I tell this story all the time. Trent Williams, multiple times. When I covered the team, like could not walk on Wednesday. Yeah. Thursday could barely get down to the practice field. And I'd be like, I just don't see it. And then Sunday he'd be out there leading on a screen, like knocking dudes off their block. And I'm like, this is not a person. This is not a human being. This
is a different kind of deal, man. You know,
it is. And there's magical potions for sure. There's probably another conversation to have on those at some point, but we don't need to do that on Take Command today. Similarly, actually, and this is not always that I can relate with you guys, but like sometimes I'll get out of my bed in the morning and I'll feel something and then I'll take Tylenol and
it's gone.
I'll be damned if I'm not able to get through the radio show. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so I'm done with the show and I come home and my wife's like, you should fight crime. You know, she's just so blown away and just looks at me lovingly.
By the physical courage.
And that's really what it is. Honestly, guys, it's physical courage is what it is. Me being here right now with a sore throat, honestly, hockey guy, physical courage. So like Logan's stories are cool and all, but just a little respect, please. All right. Here's something we do know about. Austin Ekeler is out for the season. What a disastrous, devastating thing for him. What good dude. He's on my show, Grant and Danny, on 106.7 The Fan every Tuesday at 5 p.m. So I've gotten to know him very well. This is a total bummer. And it's non-contact and it's prototypical Achilles. It's one of those things where I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going hard in the paint right after, but everybody knew exactly what happened. And then you can see him on the bench and he's saying he's done. And it's terrible. If you have a thought on him, that's fine. But I guess my question is, to keep it moving here, sadly, like now what? I mean, how does this shift things? He somehow inexplicably doubled up Bill and carries this past week. Like, how do they go about the running back room now?
Yeah. So first off, like heart goes out to Austin Ekeler. Like that's just a tough injury at this point in his career. Like that's a tough way to, I don't know, man. Like that's one of those things that like I lose sleep about, you know, like I'm a personal trainer on the side and I do some rehabs and that's just a tough injury to navigate and deal with. So, you know, hearts and prayers go out to him and his family and hopefully, you know, he gets some good out of it in terms of spending time with his wife and things like that. But, in terms of replacing him, I think, you know, what I would say is like, you've built this running back room in a way, or Adams built the room in a way where you can replace him relatively easily. You know, like Jeremy McNichols is a very proficient third down pass protector. I think when you look at Bill in terms of his first and second down runs, even in the Green Bay game against that dominant front, like he was very efficient. And then you watch him against the New York Giants. And then you say, oh, well, what do we do for depth? And you have Chris Rodriguez who's sitting right there for you, who had a great preseason, great offseason, OTA mini camp training camp period, and you say, wow, like we're actually in a pretty decent spot to offset this injury. Now obviously you can't replace him completely because of his dynamism, because of his explosiveness, because of his physical tools that he brought and his experience, and you're going to be dealing with that like with some of these younger players. But I think with McNichols, like people forget he's a 10-year NFL vet. So when you say, oh, like can we put someone in on third down who's seen a lot of pressures, absolutely, he's right there, he's in the building, you love him, he's physically tough, he's physically competitive. Let's give him those opportunities. Now, I think you got to be smart about how you divvy up those opportunities and who gets what and how you want to utilize that group. And there is a special teams component to this as well if McNichols is playing more. But I think you can offset this relatively easily. And again, you can't fully replace, but you can offset the injury pretty straightforward.
So you mentioned that you liked what you saw from Crosky Merritt. I did as well. I'm never going to scream about they should have run the ball more when they can't run the ball effectively.
Yeah, this is very off brand for you right now.
It's just, well, I'm not that guy. I want to throw the football every single down, but I found it odd that he only got four carries. And what I mean by that is I don't need you to run the ball more. I need him to get more of the differentiation of the attempts. Now I get that there's certain looks and Eckler's in the gun or whatever we're doing here, but
FanDuel's getting you ready for the NFL season with an offer you won't want to miss. New customers can bet just $5 and get $300 in bonus bets if you win. That's right. Pick a bet, bet $5, and if it wins, you'll unlock $300 in bonus bets to use all across the app. You can build parlays, bet player props, ride live lines, whatever your style, FanDuel has you covered. The NFL season is almost here. The only question is, are you ready to play? Visit FanDuel.com/command to download the FanDuel app today and get started.
Must be 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Coming off of the week one performance, where he's number two in the league in rushing yards over expected per attempt, where forget the nerd numbers, like watch that tape. It was freaking awesome. I can't leave Green Bay with him in a game that was a one possession game in the fourth quarter, touching the ball four times. Sorry, I can't do that.
Yeah, this is an interesting kind of philosophical, kind of logistical question for football coaches. And so let's start with the logistical element. Like, one thing that I thought about is maybe you say, because he's a young player, we only give him the 12 personnel runs. So when John Bates and Zach Ertz are in, he gets all those carries. And if you look at the first week against the New York Giants, all of his runs were in 12 personnel. And so
Is it because that's what he's mastered mentally and knows, or why is that?
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it. You know, as you kind of say, how do we get him on the field? How do we kind of make sure he owns his portion of the game plan? Where's an area where we don't feel like we need Austin in the game? 12 runs. Let's do that. So when John Bates gets hurt, he comes out. The other thing too is I felt like when I was watching the game on the sideline, because you don't really feel this when you're watching the All-22 or even watching the game copy, is I felt like there are times where I've been on teams and I've called games like this where it's a one score game, but you feel this tremendous urgency as a play caller to find an explosive chunk. And I felt like there was times where you've only run six plays in the first quarter. We're kind of getting into like a 2 minute hurry up deal in the second quarter, but it's still a one possession ball game. So like, can we be patient is the word I'm going to use, and kind of stay with the run game, stay with the quick game, be okay with punting the football. Because even though our defense had given up some explosive plays, like we'll talk about this when we get to the defense, like down to down, like they actually were, you're like, oh, okay, like this is pretty good. Like if you're just watching the game straight, you just say, okay, like that's good, that's good, that's good. Oh, there's the explosive play. Oh, they're good, that's good, that's good. And they were actually doing a pretty good job. So being patient, trusting your defense, I think is another thing where I would just be like, I'd love to talk to Cliff about it and see if he felt any kind of consternation about maybe we need to find these explosive plays to support our defense. And maybe that's why Bill wasn't getting the touches, but it could be either one. And there's no way to know because they're not going to tell us. But I think I felt some of that on the sideline. And again, like I felt it as a player. I've seen other coordinators feel it. And it's just kind of reminding yourself that we're not in a rush because it's still one possession ball game. And then obviously the package element, which is, I don't know, but that's a thought I had when kind of reviewing the film yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, dive into some of that and see if we can corroborate just like, you know, what there's something there, clearly. Real quick, I want to ask you about Josh Connerly. And I think this ties into maybe John Bates, who left with an injury. He's got a groin. Again, don't want to speculate, but leaves immediately. And sometimes that can linger for a couple of weeks. He's such an underrated part of this team. Like they immediately paid him $7 million a year, 3-year deal, kept him around. Dan Quinn has basically referenced him as one of his favorite guys on the team, you know, this summer. They clearly love him. And a big reason why is he's one of the better blocking tight ends in the league. But while I'm still very high on Josh Connerly long-term this season, here's kind of where I'm at. And you tell me what I'm missing. First few days of training camp, I thought Josh Connerly like struggled immensely. And I was thinking, I can't have him start every day against the Giants, probably, or every play against the Giants. By the end of training camp, I was sold on him. I was like, and in preseason games, I was like, okay, I'm pretty much all in on Connerly starting against the Giants. The first two games, though, have looked to me more like the early part of camp where it's been a struggle. And I think a lot of it is matchup. It's brutal, dude. You get Brian Burns, almost 70 snaps, 70 pressures last year. You get Micah Parsons, who you talked about being this world eater. Now you deal with Max Crosby. You could not design a worse situation for a debuting tackle on a different side than he's always played, like learning a new thing. So I still love him long term. The athleticism, the footwork, I think he's going to be a beast. But right now I'm nervous enough that I would actually consider playing Wiley this week against the Raiders with Crosby coming to town.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Everyone looks at, what is it, 5 pressures? How many pressures do they have? 9, something like that.
He gave up 9 pressures in this game. Yeah.
And I think Kedrick Golston on the post-game review had like a really good way of putting it. It's like sometimes you're watching a guy and you're like, that ain't it. Like, we cannot, this is not sustainable. Like, it's just down to down, not good. There's not a competitive element. Like, whether it's mentally or physically, like a great example is the kid from the New York Giants yesterday.
Yeah,
who just had a total, who had a total meltdown, like total meltdown. Like, what are we doing? Right. Like, just
and by the way, everyone's seen one of these games where like a tackle gives up five sacks or something. And they, it just looks like, I'm not saying they don't in the real life, but like in that moment, they don't belong. Like, this is unsustainable. And that, if you're getting to that was not this, like, I agree with that.
Yeah. And so like, my point is like, this is like, you're like, you're going through his plays and there are, it's a tough sport. It's a tough job, but there are times where I'm like, damn, that's a really good rep against Micah Parsons. Like, you kind of stoned him there, or Rashawn Gary, way to sit that bull. And you're kind of like, that's what I'm seeing from him. And so I think there's enough good and enough positive and enough competitive confidence. That's the thing. There's enough competitive confidence in him that I'm like, I want to see him go. I want to see him. And you're going to have to deal with like the lumps and the bumps along the way. But I think he's done enough good stuff on the tape that you say we can win with this guy. And I think with tackles, you want to get them a lot of experience as long as it's not deleterious to their long-term development. So like a good example is like people with quarterbacks, like you don't like, I don't know if anybody watched the Monday night game last night versus, you know, Minnesota versus Atlanta, where JJ McCarthy's just getting shelled. And you're kind of like, well, maybe this isn't good for him long term to be in this situation, just getting rocked by the Atlanta Falcons defense. If that was the same thing, can be true for offensive linemen. So if he does go out and gives up five sacks and looks totally outmatched, that's one thing. But I didn't feel that from watching the film. And again, he's going to make mistakes, and Micah Parsons somehow voodoo gets off faster than everybody on the offensive line. Like, that's a tough down. That's a tough out. A lot of tackles who play Micah Parsons look like that. You know who looked like that last week a little bit? Was Penei Sewell, who's one of the best right tackles in football. Yeah. So, and the thing about Penei Sewell is I felt like they did a really good job of making sure he didn't have to deal with 50-something dropbacks, right? And I think the structure of this game, he's in a lot of obvious passing situations. It's a tough, tough deal. And again, like, that's a tough job, tough situation, and I felt like he didn't shy away from it. So I'm going to stick with him. Now, if Wiley played this week, would it surprise me? Probably not. But I do think it's – I think there's a lot of good from his play, and there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about him moving forward. And it's like you articulated that extremely well. Like, is it going to be perfect all the time? No. But are we seeing enough positive trends? And I would argue yes.
Yeah, if you look at pressures right now given up in the NFL, 11 by Connerly through two games is the most in this sport. But that doesn't tell the whole story. And that's why I love this pod, and I love Logan's ability to watch it back and say, hey, that's, you know, you can say that you did an okay job there. That's pressure, but Cliff's not going to show that tape and go, this is an L. They're giving you maybe a plus on that play. I also, it really is matchup dependent for me in a sense, in the way of, if you would say, who are the three, like, here's your schedule. Who are the three guys that you don't want Connerly playing in the first 3 weeks? It might be these three dudes. You know what I'm saying?
So Miles, like, Garrett would be the other one. Yeah, but yeah, it's...
Do they play the Browns? I don't know.
No, I'm saying, like, if I was...
I'm saying, row, knowing, like, Washington's 17-game schedule, okay, let's not open with... My, you know, like Micah Parsons and world eating space vulture, Max Crosby, who's a maniac, crazy person, who, like, if you see that guy in an alley, run the other way, you know, like, this is not what I would sign up for in any way. So it really is. And I think I would say that to him. And I just don't know if this is how it works, like, behind the scenes in the, you know, in the world that you live in. If I can go to him and be like, hey, bro, we're going to reset you. We're going to, it's a 1 week thing. You're kick some ass in practice. Like, we love you. We like where you're at. We're just going to get to work and let's get ready for the Falcons. Oh, by the way, who destroyed the Minnesota front last night and who drafted two dudes in the first round. They've been the worst pass rushing team in the league for 5 years running. And all of a sudden now it looks like they can get to the quarterback a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's, I don't know if, it's always tough when you got to deal with a guy's minutes, because even though you can go to him and be like, hey, man, like, it's not you, it's me. It's like, you're always, the kid's always going to be like, it's me, obviously. Or else,
well, how about the Giant? You mentioned the Giants kid. Did you see his reaction when he got benched?
Lost his mind.
I mean, he just wanted to throw people into the stands.
But I was like, I was like, there's no way you're going to be having this reaction rationally. Hudson, right? I was like, that was the one of the worst opening series. And again, I've had some bad, rough opening series. You know, I had the first penalty of 2017, right, against the Eagles when I was in Atlanta. Like, I've done some bad stuff on an opening drive. But that was the most meltdown of meltdowns I've ever seen. And you're like mad you're getting benched. It's like, bro, you had two personal fouls, two false starts. You negated a bunch of explosive plays. Like, come on, let's like take a breath.
You got to wear that one a little
bit. Yeah, like you messed that one up. Let's get back in the saddle here. So
just a little bit. You got to wear this one. No, he just wants to bust Brian Daboll's skull. By the way, it seemed like every coach on the sideline looked exactly like Brian Daboll, which was weird. Like, they were all just like bald guys with beards. I was like,
yeah.
Well, they've got a look there, apparently. All right, we got to get into the defensive side of the ball, Logan, before we get out of here. It is Take Command. He's Logan. I'm Grant. The Pulse, 106.7 The Fan and the Team 90.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.